Thank you very much to the organizers for the opportunity to speak. I want to continue the discussion of a heterodic standard model that was done with these authors, but it's based on an enormous amount of previous work done particularly with Ron Dinagi at the Penn Math Physics Research Group and more recently with Rene Reinbacher. I want to discuss the heterodic string, the E8 cross E8 heterodic string. It has two sectors, an observable and hidden sector. This is a little standard. I will go quickly, mainly because my talk is also too long. I want to compactify the heterodic string on a Calabi-Yau threefold in order to get an n equals 1 supersymmetric theory in four dimensions. We're going to demand that this have a non-trivial fundamental group, which will be Z3 cross Z3, which is the minimal finite group that we can use for our purposes here. We put a vector bundle on that Calabi-Yau. It's got structure group SU4 for the reason I'll discuss in a minute. Vector bundle's a fancy word, but all that it really means is that it admits a connection which satisfies the Hermitian-Yang-Mills equations under appropriate conditions. Because it's a non-trivial fundamental group, we can have a Wilson line, a flat bundle, which has a non-trivial holonomy group, which we will assume is the full Z3 cross Z3. The role of these bundles is to take the group E8 and to break it. We choose an SU4 structure group in order to break the spin 10. The reason is that we now know there's neutrino masses and an unbroken supersymmetry. You're going to need a right-handed neutrino in order to accomplish that at the appropriate masses, measured masses. And therefore, spin 10 looks really good because, as Ed Witten pointed out years and years ago, you can incorporate all quarks, leptons, and the right-handed neutrino in the single 16 spin representation of spin 10, and that's what we're going to do. However, you want to go down to low energy to something containing the standard model, and we're going to break with the Z3 cross Z3 Wilson line. However, to preserve the rank, you have to get an extra U1, which turns out to be precisely a U1B minus L. That's both a blessing and a curse because the B minus L is great because it helps to suppress nucleon decay, but then you have to show how to spontaneously break that, and if I have a chance, I'll discuss this at the end of the talk. Let me just give the results of the spectrum, which is really the main point of this talk. We find, as we had better find, that we get three families of quarks and leptons. Each family descends from a 16, so in fact, we get left and right-handed quarks, left and right-handed leptons, as well as a right-handed neutrino. As I will show you, shortly. You also, from the 10, you can get Higgs and Higgs bar. However, we find two pairs of Higgs and Higgs bar, no more, but no less. We've tried for 2 months to reduce this. We find two pairs of Higgs and Higgs bar. Whatever the implications of that may be, that is something that we find here. I don't think we're at the level of calling this a prediction yet, but we get two pairs of Higgs and Higgs bar. We get a very small number of moduli, six geometric moduli, and as I'll explain later in the talk, a very small number of vector bundle moduli. And what I really want to emphasize, because I think it's the first time in any of these string constructions, we get absolutely no exotic matter whatsoever. By exotic matter, I mean multiplets that do not carry quantum numbers in the standard model, but I also mean replicas of standard model quantum numbers that come in vector-like pairs. We don't get any vector-like pairs, and we don't get any exotic matter whatsoever, with the exception of the fact that we get two pairs of Higgs and Higgs bar. So how do these constructions work? Volker Braun gave a beautiful talk, I thought, in Fields Institute, where he described this, so I will, without doing any mathematics, just run through this. We look at, in order to find the Calabi-Yau space X, we look at elliptically fibered Calabi-Yau threefolds that are simply connected, we'll call it X twiddle, and they're elliptically fibered over a DP9 base. This sounds very technical, but the DP9 base is very nice because it itself is elliptically fibered over a projective sphere. And that gives us the possibility of using Lorentz spectral sequences easily to predict the spectrum, to count the cohomology and predict the spectrum. So that's an important fundamental thing. One can show that you can have a free action, a Z3 cross Z3 action from X twiddle to itself. That's not a trivial thing to show, but it is true. And because it's true, you can then produce a Kolobyov threefold X by modding out the Z3 cross Z3 action. It will be a smooth Kolobyov threefold. However, it's no longer elliptically fibered. It's now torus fibered. You can't put a zero on each of these tori globally. So it's a torus vibration, but that's okay. It's still fibered over DP9. And by construction, it does what we want. It has a non-trivial first homotopy group, which is Z3 cross Z3. You can compute the Hodge diamonds for all this stuff. You can show that H11 is 3, and H21 is also 3. The reason you get small numbers here is that you have to constrain things in order to get the Z3 cross Z3 action. And hence, we have 3 Kähler and 3 complex structure moduli, as I said before. One has to put a vector bundle on this with structure group SU4. We do this by first working on X twiddle and constructing stable holomorphic vector bundles V twiddle with an SU4 structure group there. This is done by a different method than has been used before. We had been using so-called spectral cover constructions, first done by Danagi and independently by Freeman, Morgan, and Witten. But here we have abandoned that entirely, and we find that these standard model bundles come from a new construction, which is due to Tony Pantev and Ron Danagi, who taught us all this stuff. And it's construction by extension. I will say nothing about it here. It's just too technical, and Volker talked about it at Fields. However, it's done by taking two rank two bundles, V2 and V2 prime. There you can create SU4 bundles by so-called extension. You don't just get one, you get a whole bunch of them. It fills out a linear space called X1. And in fact, Z3 cross Z3 acts on that space. If you look at the action, a lot of these bundles, rank four bundles, are moved around by the action. But there's an invariant subspace as well, which we've shown is non-trivial. If an element is in the invariant subspace, that is, it is not moved around by the Z3 cross Z3, it is referred to as being equivariant. And in fact, that's the kind of bundle that we are going to use. That's actually a more important statement than it may sound. When it's equivariant, you can actually mod out Z3 cross Z3 from the bundle, loosely speaking, when you take the quotient to go down to X space. So we can construct the bundle V as the quotient of V twiddle. This will be a stable holomorphic vector bundle on X, and it'll have the same structure group. If you try to do this without equivariant bundles, you end up with so-called gerbs. You have anti-symmetric tensor as well as connections and low energy. And that was worked out, very beautiful theory of that also by Tony Pantev and Ron, but we haven't used it here. We're going to use equivariant bundles. The key point, and what's new to the Penn group this year, is that we can completely compute the spectrum in these situations. So first, we really want the spectrum at low energy, but let me first compute the spectrum on X twiddle, and then we'll apply the Wilson line later on to get the low energy spectrum. So on X twiddle, we have an SU4 bundle, which its commutant is spin 10. It's well known that the 248, which is the gauge representation, breaks up under SU4 cross spin 10 in this way. This gives gauge fields, this gives moduli, and the last three are matter. 16s we want, 16 bars we don't, and 10 we only want part of it because it contains the Higgs, but it also contains color triplets. More about that in a moment. So how do you find the spectrum? Well, it's well known that what you have to do is compute the zero mode of the Dirac operator on X twiddle twisted by the vector bundle, and that's given by this expression. So for example, if you want to know how many 16s there are, you have to calculate the first cohomology group with this sheaf cohomology group with respect to V twiddle. If you want the number of tens, you have to calculate the first cohomology group with respect to the sheaf wedge to V twiddle, and so on. So as fancy as some of this math may sound, it's really very simple. If you want the spectrum, you have to say something about cohomology. So for instance, if we look at the 45, Then if you go back and you look, you see you have to get the dimension of H0 of the trivial bundle, but that always gives unity. And therefore, in these models, we need a Wilson line because there are no adjoint figs to help break it down lower. So we really have to go through this simple Wilson line construction. That's why there's a Z3 cross Z3 there. For any other representation, there is some bundle U of R, I'll call it, corresponding to it, and you have to compute the dimension of the corresponding cohomology. So for example, if you want to know how many tens there are, you have to compute the dimension of H1 of wedge 2 V twiddle. Of course, you don't do this in a vacuum. You really want physics to come out of this. So there are some very important physical constraints that you have to put in. To get realistic particle physics, you need at least the following three. We want three generations of quark and leptons. That translates after you mod out the theory into the fact that the number of families versus the number of antifamilies of quarks and leptons should be three. So you have to build that in. However, there's mathematics that's relevant to this. There's an Atiyah-Singer index theorem in this regard, which is an alternating sum of the dimensions of cohomology. And in fact, if the bundle is stable, as this, whoops, pointing it at myself, so. You find that the bundles are stable, and if you use Serre duality, that it gives you back just the quantity you want to compute. But it tells you that in general, that's equal to minus a half of the third Chern class. So if we want three families, we'd have to constrict the bundles so that third Chern class of V would be minus six. However, remember, we're working with this V-twiddle, so actually you have to take minus six and multiply it by nine, the dimension of the finite space. So it tells us that V-twiddle has a third Chern class of minus 54. There's a picture of this, which is very important. Remember, the number of 16s is the dimension of H1 of V-twiddle. So there's all the 16s going up to the top there. The number of 16 bars is the dimension of H1 of V twiddle star, and that's these guys. These are less than that in order to saturate the Atiyah-Singer index theorem. And the difference between them is precisely C3, the absolute value divided by 2. So you get 27 chiral 16s, which will become the standard model quarks and leptons, and I will show you that in a moment. But you also generically get a whole ton of 16 bar 16 vector-like pairs. And this is exotic matter. And we don't want that matter in this theory, so we are going to demand that it is projected out. That's something that's never been possible, as far as I know, in any string construction, but we can do this now. So we're going to, doing it again, we're going to demand that the number of 16 bars, that is, this cohomology, vanish. We also want a small number of Higgs fields, and there shouldn't be zero Higgs, so the number of tens, where the Higgs is going to come from, shouldn't be zero, but it should be minimal. So with all that in mind, and using this vast technology that we learned from Ron Dinagi and Tony Pantev, we compute this stuff. And we find we can satisfy the first two conditions. Particularly, we can get no exotics whatsoever, no 16 bars. But the number of tens turns out to be 14. That doesn't mean there's 14 Higgs, because we have to continue this story. But that is the minimal number, and we do not know how to make it smaller. Of course, the spectrum of real interest is the low energy spectrum on X rather than X twiddle. And to find that spectrum, you have to take just what we had before. Of course, the 16 bar now is zero because that cohomology vanishes. But you have to take this spectrum, and then what's projected down when you act with the Wilson line is the invariant part of this under Z3 cross Z3. So what one has to do is find the representation of Z3 cross Z3 on the relevant cohomology group. You also have to find its representation on the representation itself, which is through the Wilson line. You then take the tensor product and you find the invariant subspace, and it's only invariant subspace which descends. So that gives you the possibility of projecting out an enormous amount of stuff, And that's exactly what happens. I want to show you that in detail because I think that's the main thesis of this talk. It is double or triplet splitting, a beautiful way in which this occurs. I have to set notation. So there are two so-called characters of Z3 cross E3. It's fundamentally irreducible representations of one dimensional because it's abelian. Chi1 represents the first generator of Z3 by a third root of unity and the second generator by 1. Chi2 does the reverse. So with that in mind, let's go look at these matter multiplets that are occurring. We've gotten rid of the 16 bar 16 vector-like pairs. They simply don't exist. But we still have 27 16s floating around. So what's going to happen to these guys? And what happens is this. We ask, how does the Z3 cross Z3 act on the cohomology associated with the 16, which is H1 of V Twiddle? We find that it acts, it gets represented as three copies of the so-called regular representation of Z3 cross Z3, which I simply write out here. This is a very cute notation that Volker Braun just loves to use. It's beautiful, but it's a little obscure. You might think of these things as just matrices, and you'll see the diagonal matrices that contain all the possible characters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So each regular representation is 9 dimension, but there's 3 of them, which fills out the complete 27 of H1 as it should. So that's how Z3 cross Z3 acts on the cohomology, but you have to ask how it acts through the Wilson line on the representation 16. Under SU5, just to put things in context, this would decompose into a 10, a 5 bar, and a 1. It's a 5 bar. And then under the low energy group that I showed you before, it decomposes like this. I'm suppressing U1 hypercharge and U1 D minus L for simplicity. But the characters are there, so you get a non-trivial action on the 16 as well. You take that action, this one, you take their tensor product, and you form the invariant subspace, and that is what is projected down to the low-energy theory. And we find that it is spanned by three copies of the following multiplets. So we have quarks left and right, fermions, leptons left and right, and a right-handed neutrino as expected. But all of these things are not coming from a single 16. There were 27 16s. We are splitting the multiplets. It is a fundamental method of splitting multiplets. It takes a piece from here, a piece from there, and it assembles it into three families of quarks and leptons. This is even clearer when you look at the 10 representation. Using this Lorentz spectral sequence, which I can't discuss here, but Volker has discussed and is in our papers, one can, in fact, compute the action of Z3 cross E3 on the cohomology associated with the 10, which is where the Higgs is going to come from. And that's H1 of wedge 2V. And we find this result. So you're just going to get a whole bunch of matrices here. They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times 2, 14 dimensional. So it's consistent with what I said before, that we found that H1 of wedge 2 of V Twiddle had 14 dimensions. However, the 10 also gets acted on by the Z3 cross Z3 through the Wilson line. And it decomposes, if you will, into a 5 and a 5 bar, but then to the low energy gauge group like this, where again I'm ignoring the U1 factors. And you see this non-trivial action on those multiplets as well. The rule is I take this action times that action, the tensor product, and I take the invariant subspace of that. And what we find is Higgs and Higgs bar only, but we get two copies of them. It's a four-dimensional space, not a two-dimensional space. We tried for 2 months to see whether within our context, which is really quite wide, we could get just one Higgs and Higgs bar, and we could not do it. So that's how we get that. The point I want to make is that all the colored triplets, of which there were many, were projected out. and this is an explicit mechanism for double triplet splitting. People have tried over the years in many contexts and ways to split multiplets, but it simply follows from the theory and the heterotic theory. It's just the way it works, so you don't have to do anything special. You get double triplet splitting, and indeed you get multiplet splitting. Finally, I just want to show why there are a small number of moduli that you expect. The moduli, the ones, will come from add v-twiddle, the adjoint bundle v-twiddle. We've computed this in many cases, though we haven't done so for this explicit model. You usually get 50 or 60 or 100 moduli, something like that. However, in our case, we're supposed to take this invariant subspace. There is no action on the 1, but there is action on the h1. And typically, what's going to happen is it's going to get divided by the number of, by the dimension of z3 cross z3. So typically, you're going to get 100 over 9 or something of order 10. Could be much more. You could project them all out, as a matter of fact. So you expect 8, 10, 12 moduli, but it's a very small number. This in itself, I think, is significant because it has been the case in the past that one got enormous numbers of moduli in heterotic theory, which is very difficult to deal with. But it's simply not the case anymore because, as Volker pointed out in his talk, you have this finite group action, and it plays a lot of roles. One of it is that it dramatically reduces the numbers of vector bundle moduli. So that's the observable sector, and as you see, it's exactly the MFSM with two changes. It's got a gauged U1 B minus L, which I think is a plus, and it also has two pairs of Higgs and Higgs bar. And that's all. It has absolutely no exotic fields whatsoever. I think string theory really can produce a spectrum which is exactly the real world, and that's a very nice thing to know. There are hidden sectors here because it's E8 cross E8 string, so let me briefly do that. In the hidden sector, we know the tangent bundle. We can compute the Chern class, the tangent bundle of X twiddle. We can compute the second Chern class of V twiddle. We wonder whether there's a bundle for the hidden sector, I'll call it V-twiddle prime. Well, the constraint is anomaly freedom through the Green-Schwarz mechanism. We know that the difference of all of these things has to either be zero, or if it's not zero, then it has to be in a so-called effective class. That is, the Poincaré dual of these things has to actually be a curve in the Calabi-Yau. That's a strong constraint. So for example, one might imagine trying to take no bundle whatsoever in the hidden sector. But if you do that, you find that W is not zero, and it's also not effective, so that's not an option. So we have to take our hidden sector bundles to be non-trivial. However, we don't need Wilson lines. It's absolutely unnecessary. So everything I say henceforth will not have any Wilson lines in it. There are two manifestations here of hidden sectors. One of them is a strong coupling result, which is only consistent with Ojala-Witten theory. That's when we take V prime, we take it to be the simplest thing we can imagine, has structure group SU2. That breaks E8 to E7, E8 prime to E7. And under SU2 cross E7, the gauge fields on the hidden sector decompose in this way. This gives the gauge fields of E7, that gives the moduli. I won't care too much about those here, though it's a very small number of moduli. But there's also matter fields in the form of 56s under E7. We don't have to, because there's absolutely no reason to worry about exotic matter in the hidden sector, but we will actually be minimalist and try to project those to zero, which means that this particular cohomology group has to be set to zero. And we find that we can, within our context, find such bundles that have exactly those properties. But when we do, it's precisely setting the matter to zero that's the problem. We find that the curve class is non-vanishing. It is effective, as it has to be, but it is non-vanishing. So this corresponds to Ojala-Witten theory, where you have five brains in the bulk wrapped on that particular holomorphic curve. That also has its own gauge group. So as Ron Danagi and Dan Waldrum and myself showed a few years ago, you can compute what the world volume theory is. In this case, the maximal gauge group is non-abelian U6. You can Higgs it by moving around in the moduli space of the curve, and it can be Higgs maximally to U1 to the sixth. So pictorially, we have the following result. We have the observable sector, which I've cleverly made yellow so you can't see it. And then you have the hidden sector. So the hidden sector has an SU2 bundle. It's got no Wilson line. It has an E7 gauge multiplet living on it and moduli and absolutely no other matter whatsoever. However, to cancel the anomaly, you have to have a brain in the bulk wrapped on this holomorphic curve W5. You can push all those brains together to get a single U6 brain, a single brain with a U6 on the world line. It has a small number of moduli, and generically, it has no matter at all. Though you can go to critical points in this theory and actually develop matter multiplets, as Antonella Grassi, myself, and Guralnek showed a few years ago. But generically, there's no other matter at all. So it's a very simple system, but it is strong coupling. So you might say, well, I wish we had a weak coupling solution, and you do. In order to get weak coupling here, you have to find vacua with no five brains. Now, it turns out that the five brain is a so-called fiber class in this theory. And work of Tony Panta and J.M.O. Park and myself years ago showed that if you tried to move such a thing to the boundary through a small instanton transition, you would expect to get a direct sum multiplet with the product group for the structure group. So we tried this simplest thing we could imagine, which was V1 and V2, each with an SU2. This breaks E8 to spin 12. And if you decompose the 248 gauge fields under SU2 cross SU2 cross spin 12, you get this mess. This is moduli, there's small number, I don't care. This is moduli, small number, I don't care. And then you get the vector bosons of the spin 12, super multiplets, of course. But then there are matter multiplets. These are hidden, of course. We don't really care what they are, but there's a 32, a 32 prime, and a 12. And we might try to play the same game of projecting these exotic matter to zero. So we try the minimalist game, and here, for the first time, we find we're not quite so lucky. We get close. We try to set the 32, the 32 prime, and the 12 to zero, which means setting these particular cohomologies to zero. In order to do this and get a vanishing curve class, we find that it's impossible. We can only set the first one to zero. The other two are not zero, but minimally, the first one is 4, the second one is 18. It's just the way it works out. However, this shows, once again, the power of multiplet splitting. In this case, the multiplet is split so that nothing is projected down and everything is projected out. Remember, we're supposed to look, let's say for the first one of these, at the action of Z3 cross Z3 on H1. There is no action on the 32 because I said there was no Wilson line here. We find that the action exists, but it has no invariant subspace. So despite the fact that that's 4 and we couldn't set it to 0, doublet triplet splitting sets it to 0. It projects everything out. So in fact, we still get nothing there. We were hopeful that that would also be the case for the 12, but it's not. We find that there is a non-trivial two-dimensional invariant subspace of H1, so we get two copies of the exotic multiplet 12. So to summarize this and end the talk, within this context, with the same observable sector, we can find hidden sectors that have vanishing curve class, and therefore these are very good weak couple vacua. They can also serve as vacua of a strong couple string if you care to do that. They have no five brains. The picture is this. This is this observable sector. Here's our hidden sector with an SU2 cross SU2 bundle, no Wilson line. We get spin 12. It's our group we have. small number of moduli, and we have two copies of matter fields, two 12 multiplets of matter. Since there's no five brains, you can push these things together and just look at weak coupled E8 cross E8 heterotic string, or you can think of them with a bulk space in the strong coupled heterotic M theory limit. So to summarize all of this, there's a great deal of physics behind this, and we absolutely do not want to say that this is a model which satisfies all phenomenology. We have no idea. We're working on this. This is interesting stuff. However, the point I want to make, I think it's an important point. I, at least, have been very concerned that string theory never seemed to be able to produce a phenomenological theory with anything near the MSSM spectrum. And what we have demonstrated here, and I think it's conclusive, and I think it's true, is that there are vacua of string theory which have, if you like, exactly the MSSM or very small deviations from it. So we have an extra Higgs-Higgs bar. Now, that has its implications, I agree. But it's still very, at least to me, important to know that string theory can produce the real world as we observe it. Final comment in advance is that you may ask about the stability of moduli here. There was work done at Penn in this math physics group with Evgeny Buchbinder, Donaghi, and myself computing the Pfaffians in the non-perturbative superpotentials. And then Evgeny and I went and we tried asking about stability in exactly these kinds of heterotic vacua. If you take Gugino condensation on the hidden brain into account, and these have large non-abelian groups and very small numbers of matter, like 0 or 2, so they're absolutely asymptotically free and they condense perfectly. So you can break supersymmetry on the hidden sector. If you include these non-perturbative superpotentials, we find that we stabilize all moduli in the theory. However, we stabilize them with a negative cosmological constant. We are trying to understand how to lift that to give us a positive cosmological constant, but we have not done so to date. So the jury's still out on how to do that. Thank you.
Are there questions for Bert?
Yes. Yeah, it certainly does. And I don't know what I think about this at this point. I go back and forth. An extra Higgs has its implications, to be sure. One thing it certainly does do is defocus the standard unification that Gordy was talking about. On the other hand, it's not obvious to me. You've got to remember these theories decompactify somewhere between 10 to the 15th and 10 to the 16th GeV. So the point of the normal supersymmetric unification occurs beyond the decompactification of these theories. And so there's threshold effects, and in strong coupling, there are large threshold effects. So I don't know the answer to that. I think one is going to have to compute strong coupling for